Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And we are back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, along with Mr. Evan Bonner and Mr. Ira Work. Mr. Ira Work, working the air conditioner in the studio. It's hot in here.
It was 82 degrees. Somebody hit the pool button and had it on 82.
No.
Okay.
It wasn't me.
I'm just telling you what I just saw.
Right. You know who you remind me of? My mother's boss. It's a flashback. My mother's old boss. He would irritate the living daylights out of my mother. Anytime she would say something and he disagreed with it. Okay, Louie, you're right. You're always right, Louie. You're right.
Clearly, HVAC wasn't on the CFP curriculum.
No, it was not. So that's right. How many certified financial planners does it take to run an air conditioner? Okay, guys, Tesla.
Yes.
Tesla, you've been watching Tesla recently, and you know the big news right now is some younger investors are getting their heads handed to them with the individual stock trades that they've been doing on the Robinhood and all of that. We've talked about how Robinhood is really Robin with the extra expenses.
Robin with a hood.
With when they are. Basically marketing that everything is cheap, free, and all of that. And then some of these studies are coming out and showing they're like more than 10 times markup on stocks that are being sold. So people think that they're getting a real big deal, and they're not. But what are they doing on there? I think that's the minor thing. That's not even the major thing. That's not even the big deal here. The big deal to me is what they're encouraging investors to do.
Right.
Which, I mean, agreed?
Yeah.
Yes.
With individual stocks and that. Well, Tesla is, it was basically passed over for inclusion in the S&P 500. And this is a stock who had this parabolic run.
You mean having no earnings disqualified them from the S&P?
Oh, is that why? Oh, come on.
Yeah,
Evan.
You have to have 4 quarters of earnings to get to the S&P.
Oh, you guys are just weeds in my garden. I think just because your stock goes up, you ought to be able to get in
there. There you go.
Don't you think? Well, you know, but that is the idea is the thinking is that, well, just because a company's big because its market capitalization value is large.
Sure.
And if you're in the top 500 in size, you would think, oh, it's going to be in. But as you guys said, not necessarily, right?
Yeah.
Well, they did announce that it was going to be added. That was an announcement about a month and a half ago.
Well, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Did you? You actually heard that it was
going to
be
added to the S&P?
Interesting. I see. I had.
Did Elon Musk make that announcement or the S&P?
No. No. It was. I remember the announcement.
Yeah.
Well, so when was Amazon added? You know, I mean, because they had an enormous market cap and they hadn't shown profit for, 17 years back in the day. But
yeah,
were they added?
That's a good question. They said that analysts pointed out a few factors potentially holding the company back, such as its profitability metrics and sales of regulatory credits to other automakers. Tesla made more than $1 billion from such regulatory credits over the past 4 quarters, its financial show, which is more than double its profits over the past 4 quarters. Quality of earnings could be a key issue for the committee. So they're concerned about the and it said, Tesla's positive profitability has been driven by the sale of regulatory credits to other auto manufacturers who need offsets in order to reach their emission standards. So maybe they think that the earnings are tenuous, that they're not necessarily going to be repeatable and that they're going to be sustainable.
I would agree.
You know, matter of fact, down here, I just saw it down here, next couple of paragraphs down. Ms. Hill said, the volatility in Tesla shares alongside with the sustainability of the company's returns also could play a role. So apparently maybe that's it as well. But I think it's just interesting. And here, I think this is instructive. You know, a lot of times when people hear what we teach about investing, they hear, just buy index funds. you know, index portfolio. And the reality of it is you can have problems with indexing because what happens when companies get added to an index, their price goes up before it gets added to the index. It's, you know, so in effect, because everybody knows that every index fund is going to have to buy that stock and they're going to drive up the demand for the stock, then what happens is people go, oh, well, you know, there are going to be a lot of buyers for this stock. They buy in anticipation of the company being added to the index. And in this particular case, it's interesting because it went up, like I just said.
Yeah.
It went up, but the problem was when it didn't come to fruition, it took a drop about 21%.
Wow.
And yeah, so that's a huge, huge drop. But that's, you know, that's what happens. And on the other side, when you have an index and the stock is removed from the index, you have an issue. In fact, it's probably a good time to share this one piece of data that I was talking to a client about this week, because he was just talking about indexing of an investment portfolio. And I made the comment, as you know, you often hear me say that I index large U.S. stocks. That's a decent place to index because, you know, it's okay. You don't have a lot of trading. You don't have a lot of change in that particular area. And we kind of minimize the bigger growth companies in the portfolio anyway, because, you know, the long-term expected return of the S&P 500 or growth companies in general would be lower long-term expected return simply because they're really big, really established companies, and they sell for a high price compared to earnings and book value. So they don't have as much room to grow, whereas value stocks, you know, almost it's like 95, 96% of the time in 20-year periods, value outperforms growth. So we would overemphasize value. Small, about 81% of the time, outperforms big companies. And when you put these things together, the overall risk of the portfolio can come down because you're investing in a lot of different, really dissimilar market segments. Well, it was interesting because I wasn't sure. So I just decided to go out and do some research this week.
You decided to do some research this
week? Yeah, I know. It's weird. I just... it doesn't happen often.
Why
except for about once a day.
And why should...
But I went and looked at the... I just went and pulled up a big index, or Vanguard. And they have a value index fund. And I compared it to a value asset class fund that I would use, that I use for our 401k plan. And I said, okay, so what's the difference price to book on what price the company's shares selling for compared to book value, which is assets minus liabilities? So the lower that number is, the more potential to grow. So you want lower price compared to book value because the book value is the assets of the company, and it gives you more potential to grow over that book value if the number that you're actually paying for the stock is closer to it. I mean, obviously, it's...
They're more on sale.
It makes sense. It just makes sense. Yeah, that's right. So if you look at the Vanguard Value Index, as of the end, I just used end of, I think it was end of June numbers because that was most recent data I had for every asset category. $1.84 was the Vanguard Value Index, $1.84. The asset class, a fund that's just tracking the asset class diligently, holding the bottom, for those of you that are nerds that want to know, we look at holding the bottom 20% of all companies in terms of price to book. That's what we define as value, okay? Bottom 20%. And it's $1.28. So that's a difference of 43.75%. In other words, the Vanguard fund is selling for 40, almost 44% higher than the asset class, that the way I want to hold it. For small companies, the Vanguard Small Cap Index is selling for 51% higher. If you look at international large, you're looking at 61%. 61% difference between the Vanguard International Value Fund. Now, that's not an index fund. It's actively managed, but they don't have an index that actually tracks that. But it's 61% higher. And what really blew me away, because this is an area that I want to hold more in because I want to have as much dissimilar price movement. I want diversification. If I'm holding big international companies, it's not as good a diversifier because big international companies move in concert with big U.S. companies. Like, think of it this way. Nissan is after the same customers that Ford is after, right? So we want to hold smaller companies that wouldn't be necessarily competing with U.S. conglomerates. International small value, 92% difference, 92% higher. which was mind-blowing to me, that the Vanguard fund was selling for that much more. So in essence, when people say, well, Paul, you're just talking about, don't stock pick, don't market time, just buy an index fund. And I'm like, well, that's problematic because they're overweighting big companies.
Yep. What was the actual price to book on the international small value between those two?
So, yeah. So the actual price to book, the Vanguard fund was $1.19.
Uh-huh.
The asset class fund was 62 cents.
Okay. So see if this works for you.
All right.
May not. And, it's not as clean as, say, a dozen eggs,
okay,
right? But let's say you're in the store looking for a dozen eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all the same grade.
I'm
and
a vegan,
large
so that's not
that.
Going to
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, that's a bad review.
No, I'm just joking.
Marshmallows. Are marshmallows on a vegan diet?
Not a
thing. So, do I want to pay $1.19 a dozen?
Uh-huh.
Or do I want to pay 62 cents a dozen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, we talk about some of these metrics, and granted,
right,
an asset class fund is way more diversified and has a lot of other advantages,
right,
but I think sometimes you kind of look at, oh, well, this is a cheaper fund. Yeah, but you're paying $1.19 for earnings versus 62 cents for earnings,
yeah,
or book value.
Well, and it's not exactly the same, as
yeah,
you well know, but you could use that to help people understand the concept because you're owning different stocks. So it's a little bit of apples to oranges. But what you're doing is you're buying companies that have 96% of the time value has
right,
a higher expected return. So it would make sense to me to be a little bit more value.
And pay as little as you can for that value.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So make
right,
sure that you're way down on that end, more value, more potential. And it's just simple. You think about it this way. A company that is more value-oriented is more value-oriented for a reason. It's not
exactly,
because it's necessarily cheaper. There's a higher risk involved in it. But the interesting thing is you mitigate a lot of that risk. You can spread that risk by owning thousands of companies. I mean, literally
yeah,
thousands of companies in a value portfolio. And, frankly, some of those companies are going to fail, but some of them are going to succeed phenomenally. And they're going to, literally come back and they have huge potential to grow. And that's the idea. They have to pay more to use your money. Now, that's the beauty of mixing a portfolio this way, is that by doing this, we reduce the risk because we have so many companies, but we combine it with other areas in the market. So I want as much dissimilarity
yeah,
as I can get. So if I'm owning a bunch of companies in one mutual fund that are selling for $1.20, and then I got another fund selling for $1.19 or something like that, well, I've lost dissimilar. I want those two numbers as far apart as I can.
Yeah.
And that's what we're getting right now. You have the S&P 500 sitting at $2.93. So it would be really cool to have something in there selling for 62 cents.
Yeah, for sure.
You see what I mean? So I think it's a hugely valid point to be made that, that's what's going on, and that's the issue between indexing a portfolio versus, just going an asset class approach. Now, right now, it's just interesting because people that have been in these big growth companies and felt bulletproof for so long are starting to see, oh, there's volatility here. Didn't know.
Right.
Next couple of months will bring us. We don't know, but this is why it's so critical to diversify. You are listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Paul Winkler, along with Evan Barnard and Ira Work, we'll be back right after this.
Hey, Paul here. I want to tell you about our next webinar we're hosting. It's on financial planning for families and individuals with special needs. Our very own Chad Henson is hosting the webinar, and he has a passion for helping the special needs community. So he went and got a degree in it. He's going to touch on topics like SSI, Medicaid, SSDI, Medicare, trusts, ABLE accounts, POAs. For individuals and families with special needs, having a financial plan in place that addresses those needs is crucial. So go to paulwinkler.com/webinar to sign up. That's paulwinkler.com/webinar. Or simply click the link in the show notes to sign up.
Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors. And confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.